This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment.
You caught the vision.
You want your family to serve God.
But sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision. Hey, Hal, do visions have feet?
Shh. How do you get from principle to practice?
What do you need to know about the issues affecting your family?
How do you apply God's Word in the 21st century?
Let's talk about it.
This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Welcome to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
All right. That's Melanie, and I'm Hal, and we are here with Michael Smith of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. He is here as the president of that august organization, and we're actually recording this at the annual Homeschool Leadership Conference, which they sponsored, bringing in state leaders from not just all of the states, but the provinces and international as well. So
it's one of our favorite things all year, just to see what the Lord is doing across the country and across the world.
But Mike, welcome. We're glad you're here with us.
Hey, glad to be with you, and glad you came to the conference again.
We wouldn't miss it. It's fantastic. Well, Michael's been telling us a lot about the Parental Rights Amendment, how that's important, and what the progress is so far, is moving this through our national agenda. And so we just asked Mike if he could give us a few minutes and kind of update our listeners on this.
Well, just go ahead, Melanie.
first, tell them what it's all about.
Okay.
What is the Parental Rights Amendment?
Well, the Parental Rights Amendment is an attempt to make for sure, forever, in the Constitution, a fundamental right of parents to direct the upbringing, education of their children. We say, what's a fundamental right? Well, in America, we recognize fundamental rights as those rights that don't come from the government, they come from God. And so they be the highest rights we got. And so in order to interfere with the fundamental right, the state would have to show a whole bunch of things, and they can't win. If we just have an ordinary right, they will win every time, because all they have to show is that a neutral law, not aimed at us, but a neutral law would be enforceable if it's rational only. Well, they can always find something rational, and judges go along with them. Now, some people have asked, Mike, why would you go for a constitutional amendment when you already have established in the Supreme Court case law in a couple of cases?
Well, I was going to ask
that. Home education is a fundamental right. Why would we do that? That's really the main question.
Right. Well, I was going to ask that because, as you say, there are Supreme Court cases. There's plenty of precedent.
Absolutely.
That say that the parent has the primary responsibility and right to oversee the upbringing of their children.
That's
and
correct.
So why would we need to go so far as a constitutional amendment
well,
for
know,
that?
Well, it seems to me like we've seen the Supreme Court change a lot over the years.
Uh-oh, now you just answered your question.
So tell us about it, Mike.
Yes, because, of course, the Supreme Court can change. And the last time a parental rights case came before the Supreme Court out of the state of Washington, there were only two justices, although this was a grandparent visitation case. And they ruled in favor of the folks that opposed the law because the law was too restrictive in terms of being able to give grandparents a right. But what happened in the process of doing that, there were only two justices that actually addressed this right as a fundamental right. Mm. They went off on all other areas, off the reservation, it's etc. So we recognized that we had a straight fundamental rights case that came before the Supreme Court, we lose it.
Wow.
The most, I think, conservative judge on there, Judge Scalia, does not recognize parental rights as a fundamental right because he says it has to be written in the Constitution.
Wow.
Now, Judge Thomas disagrees with him. He says that we can use the Liberty Clause in the 14th Amendment, and that implies liberty implies parents being able to make this choice, as Pierce and Yoder, the two cases you're talking about, the Supreme Court ruled.
But we've seen that Liberty Clause.
Well, they've used it for abortion.
Right.
And they use it for homosexual rights as well. And so it can be used for anything. So we're thinking, look, what we see in America is a trend toward lessening freedom rather than giving more freedom. And parents have the less protection of anybody going forward if we start asserting children's rights, right? So, and of course, we see that coming from the UN and international and all that. So what we're saying is if we want to protect our children's children, our children going forward, let's start now to try to pass a constitutional amendment, which means it's the law. It can't be changed, okay? Yeah. That's the reason for it.
And obviously that is built into the Constitution. We have that process, that procedure to amend, as the founders built it, it's ponderous.
Not easy.
It's slow.
Very difficult.
It's going to take, you've been working on this how many years already?
5 years.
5 years already.
And we've introduced it a couple of times and we haven't gotten it through because a bill dies in 2 years if you don't get it through.
Right.
So this will be the third time we've actually introduced the bill in this session. Now, we're encouraged because we've gotten 60 co-sponsors and we're in the House. Obviously, the Senate is that's a different story.
Yes.
And the realism is, if we don't change the nature of the Senate, the Democrats vote straight party lines on the issue of fundamental rights for parents. They don't vote for them. They vote against them.
Right.
The Republicans, generally speaking, although we don't get all of them, generally speaking, see it as something that should be protected with a constitutional amendment. So we've got to work, we've got to try to pass it in the House first, and then we've got to try to change the nature of the Senate. If we can do that, we've got a good chance. Now, then it goes to the states, and of course it goes to the state legislatures, and the state legislatures have to approve it by two-thirds.
Well, you know, that really points out the importance of Christians being involved in the political process.
Tell me about it.
From the lowest levels to the highest levels.
Absolutely.
We've got to vote principle, even in that state legislature, or we're not ever going to be able to pass this, right?
It starts at the lowest level, because in your caucuses, in your parties, you have to be able to get conservative people. Just because they're Republicans doesn't mean that they even understand these issues, quite frankly.
That's
so
very true.
The battle is not even easy there. We have this problem in Virginia, where I am right now. We have the moderate Republicans, and when our nominee for governor, Ken Cuccinelli, got the nomination, they refused to support him, and they've got the money. They will not. They would give up the governorship to a conservative Republican simply because they don't want to support him, to a left-wing liberal that would be probably as bad as Obama.
Wow.
That's the problem we have. So it's hard work. It requires a lot of, you know, grassroots work. But that's where it really starts. But as you say, our congressmen and senators have to reflect our beliefs. Otherwise, we got no chance.
And so we can't just vote on that familiar name.
No.
But we've got to do research and find out what do they really stand for. And, you know, I'm convinced that starts in just our local party meetings.
Absolutely.
You know, that I think people need to get out, Christians need to get out to their local party meeting, because people don't understand, if they don't make it to the city council, they might not ever make it to the state legislature.
That's right.
You know, that's an interesting part of political history. If you look at where did the president start their political career, you see so many of them started in their state legislatures, started in county councils, were elected heads of militia units. I mean, very small, local, we would say kind of humble, unimportant beginnings. And yet that school board member today, 10 years from now, may be the speaker of your house in your local state, because he's got to start somewhere.
Absolutely. George Washington, of course, didn't really have a whole lot of political experience, but he's the exception, right?
I mean,
they just kind of nominated him out of, we like you.
But
that's not the case. What happens, you really have to earn your way through this thing.
Right.
And the process is tedious, takes a long time, but Melanie, your point is this, as families, Christian families, we have to actually help these people, because by doing that, guess what? Then they know what we believe, and know if they ever get elected, we call them and say, Bob, boy, we're glad you get elected. Remember us when we worked for you and did this, that, and you told us you would support parental rights, right?
And they
have an amendment now, and we want your vote.
Yes, and when they remember all those doors we knocked on, all those phone calls we made, they want us to be there for their next re-election.
That's what they remember, though.
That's what they remember,
You know, one thing I wanted to mention, too, you know, this is we're here at a convention of homeschool leaders, but this is not purely a homeschool issue by any means.
No, it's not.
You've carefully cast it as something much broader and more fundamental.
Correct, and that's the reason we actually started a separate organization, a separate corporation called parentalrights.org, and we really should say people should go to that website, and they should sign the petition, and they should donate some money, because without money supporting the organization, and without these petitions, and the petition basically says, I'll get behind this. I'll make a call to my congressman when it's time.
Right.
So we really urge them to do that.
So give us the name of that website again, Mike.
Parentalrights.org.
Okay.
So remember that. Now, so where we're standing right now, do we have a timetable, or are we kind of taking it one step by providential step at a time?
We don't have a timetable because, look, it's a, well, people call this impossible.
Right.
Okay? They say it's impossible. But you know what? Most things that God calls us to do are impossible.
That's right.
Can we save ourselves?
No.
It's impossible.
It's impossible.
Can we homeschool? It's impossible, right? How many people tell you it's impossible? Right?
That's right.
Now, Melanie didn't have that problem, apparently, because she's homeschooling, but there are times when she said, this is impossible.
Weekly, and I've been homeschooling for 2 decades.
So the point is, I guess, what I'm saying, we don't stop doing something because it's impossible. As a matter of fact, we should be walking in the impossible and taking on the impossible, right?
Right.
So
absolutely.
That encourages us to think that God is going to have to make this happen, or it's not going to happen, right? When we're weak, we're strong. We got the scriptures on our side.
That's right.
We don't know how long it'll take.
Right.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Now, how much are there other organizations or other movements, if you will, that are coming on board with this?
There are. I can't give you the names right now, but if you go to that website, they have the supporting organizations on there.
Okay.
And some of them will surprise you. There are actually one or two folks that we would consider left-wing, but they actually recognize this as something that will protect parents, and it's a freedom movement.
Great.
Good. Very good. All right.
We're reaching the end of our time. We need to take a little break, but can you come back for another segment, Mike?
Oh, sure. Be glad to.
We've got some more things we'd like to ask you.
Okay. Very good.
Jarrah was a slave in Egypt. It was a dangerous place to be. The work was exhausting, and her family was torn between the gods of the Egyptians and the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And her brother, would his Ada be given in marriage to an Egyptian in the palace? Would they ever be free? Adventure, excitement, love, and faith come together when Jera and her family find themselves at the culmination of 400 years of history in A Cry from Egypt, the historical novel by Hope Auer, selected by David Quine's Cornerstone Curriculum and the Tapestry of Grace program, endorsed by Rob Shearer of the Schaefer Study Center. Order your copy from the website, acryfromegypt.com. Brought to you by Great Waters Press.
All right, welcome to Making Biblical Family Life Practical. I'm Hal Young.
And I'm Melanie Young.
And we are talking with Michael Smith, the president of Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And we've been talking about the Parental Rights Amendment. And you can get all sorts of information if you go to parentalrights.org, O-R-G, and check out their website. But, you know, underlying this or running alongside of it, there is a larger issue here, an issue of international law and treaties, particularly things coming out of the United Nations. Michael's telling us earlier about some of the risk that we're facing from treaties dealing with disabled persons as well as the rights of children.
Yeah, can you address that for us, Mike? Tell us, why would that affect us?
Well, let's just start back with treaties first.
Mm-hmm.
We have an article in our Constitution that says that treaties are the supreme law of the land. Now, the problem and the scary thing about that is the kind of treaties that our Constitution, our guys that drafted the Constitution were thinking about, were trade treaties between countries.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of treaties we're dealing with now in America are called human rights treaties.
Right.
They grant rights to people.
Mm-hmm.
So can you imagine? We've got the UN telling us what rights we have to grant to people. And that's what this is about.
I can't imagine our founders going for that.
Oh, well, they wouldn't go for it, but unfortunately, we're a long way away from that, Melanie.
Mm-hmm.
We're a long way down the road. So international law and the UN Convention are motivating our courts in a way that we're not, well, they're not family friendly, let's put it that way.
Okay.
They more deal with children's rights. For instance, the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child would be the worst thing that ever happened to America if it passed our Senate. What would happen is the UN and Congress would have sovereign control over families, education, and parental discipline.
Mm-hmm.
Why would that be, Mike? Because it would become federal, not state. Now it's all state, you see.
Yes.
The federal government has no jurisdiction in juvenile court cases, which is where families end up if somebody challenges whether they're abusing or neglecting their family or whatever, okay? That would all change.
Why would that be the most terrible thing? It sounds good when you read it.
Well,
can you tell us a practical example of the kind of thing that might happen?
Yes. Well, because it deals with children's rights to supersede parental rights. I'll give you an example. There's a commission that's 18 members of a commission that when a nation, incidentally every nation except the United States, has adopted the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. Everyone that subscribes to the UN. Everyone except one. Us.
Okay.
Praise God. And we can thank the homeschool community because they stopped it 20 years ago. But if it actually passed, what would happen is, according to this commission that interprets the language, that children would be treated with dignity. That means you can't spank a child. You can't discipline a child with an actual touch on the child. That's one example. Two, children, when they get old enough, should be able to be consulted about what kind of education they're entitled to. Now, how do we know that? Because they've gone into countries like Great Britain, where they still allow spanking and where they have homeschooling, and they've said, you are not upholding the intent of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child unless you consult with children, and they have rights to make decisions regarding education, friends, music, and get this, religion.
Well, so
what religion?
There's not much left of
what's
the
left
so
for
what's
parenting.
Left of parenting.
There isn't.
And so that doesn't even take into account the immaturity of the child.
Not, well, actually there's some immaturity built into it. But the dignity of the child would be if a child reached 12 or 13, let's say, and they didn't want to go to church three times a week or twice a week or didn't want to go to the Baptist church or didn't want to go at all, they could consult a social worker and say, I'm being abused by my parents. They're in violation of the UN Convention because they haven't consulted with me. I don't want to do it. Can we go to court? Yes.
Wow.
And now here's the big problem. The basic standard then for determining whether or not this child would win is the best interest of the child.
As determined by who?
Judge. And this is before there's a determination there's actually been any abuse or not, because they pass completely over that section. That's the scary part of this.
Well,
that's the reason it's so scary.
Well, I want to underscore what you said there. This is not just conjecture of worst case could happen. You say there are actual examples of it currently happening.
Yes.
In places like
other places,
Great Britain, like
that's
developed nations.
Yeah, these are developed nations.
These are not, you know, nations with lots of repressive laws. But you're talking about places that Americans would recognize.
That's correct.
Western civilization being driven by
bureaucrats, UN Convention,
and the UN.
That's correct. Now
the reason it
happens in these nations is because, see, Great Britain respects law,
right.
So they follow the law. Saudi Arabia, although they've adopted this, they ignore it. And the commission can come there all day and tell them to do something. They will do
nothing.
They don't care.
True.
But the United States, we pride ourselves that we're a country of law. And so if that becomes law, judges are required to enforce it.
That is a frightening. So that isn't serious. All right, now, that's the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. You've also been talking this past week, and by the way, if you're just joining us, we are at the National Homeschool Leadership Conference sponsored by HSLDA, and so that's why we have some background noise. This is one of those live recordings. Well, you have been talking this weekend about the Convention on the Rights of Disabled Persons.
Correct.
And you said that has serious impact on homeschoolers particularly.
Yes,
it does. Can you tell us about that, Mike?
Yes, I can.
What is the passage in that law that's the problem, in that treaty?
Once again, this standard called best interest of the child standard that we use only in two situations in America right now, divorce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Parents get divorced. They can't agree on who should get custody and all of that regarding children.
So they call
the
in
court,
a third parent, the court.
The court becomes the parent and makes the decision regarding what's best for the child, who gets the child, where the child goes to school, etc. Mm-hmm. That's one area. The other is in our juvenile court system, and it only comes in after the court has made a determination that the children have been harmed sufficiently to remove them.
Mm-hmm.
The state then becomes their parent. Then decisions regarding where they go, etc., are based on the best interest of the child. That's the only two areas
that
you're
telling us that in common law, in what we base our laws on in the United States traditionally, that the best interests of the child have only come into play when the parents are taken out of the picture.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Now, what would happen with the Convention on Persons with Disabilities is this. Right now, I'm going to give you a scenario. Parents are in a public school. They've got an IEP. They've got a special child.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
But they're not getting the attention they want. And so somebody tells them about homeschooling. By the way, you can homeschool and you can spend all this time with your child, and they have all this curriculum, etc. And HSLDA has these special needs coordinators.
Yeah.
You just call them up and they work miracles for you.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to try that.
Yeah.
So they pull out and they get a letter from the school district that says this: you cannot homeschool a special needs child. Now, what's that parent going to do? They're being told that. Well, if they call us, we're going to tell them, that's not true. You're the parent. You have a fundamental right to make this decision. Guess what? The UNPRCD changes that and says if you withdraw a child that's already been labeled as learning disabled, has an IEP in a public school, you withdraw them, your ability to homeschool is based on the best interest of the child again.
And again, who
passes
who
the whole
that?
Process? Well, ultimately, a judge will determine it, because what they'll do, they'll file a petition in juvenile court that says the parents will be neglecting the child's education because they don't have what? The credentials, the special credentials required to teach a special needs child. This is really serious.
Wow.
And that was one of those things, you know, that our founders really emphasized, that we are building a nation of laws, not a nation of men, meaning the individual personalities should not be the determinant in how our laws are implemented. And yet, when things come down to a single judge's decision, what are we doing?
We're a rule of men, not laws.
We're back to that precise situation.
And here's the problem. Juvenile court judges, family law court, because it's based on the best interest of the child, it is almost impossible to reverse that on appeal, because the appellate courts give credence to to the judge because these are facts intensive, okay?
Right.
And best interest of the child is ephemeral. Who knows
yeah,
what that is?
That's
I mean,
subjective.
That, you know, throw up a coin, right?
Right.
So they don't reverse them. So if you lose at the trial level, you're done.
Wow.
You can spend all the money you want, and you're going to lose your appeal.
Now, you said something this morning in speaking to the leaders that deeply concerned me. You mentioned that there would be there's a national database if this treaty were confirmed by the Senate. There'd be a national database, and children would be entered maybe at birth.
Yes.
If a disabling condition were found, you know, think about one of our children was born with a heart condition.
Yes.
She's completely well now, but she would have been in that database, right?
That's true if they're in the public school. Now that's
right.
The reason you want to stay out of the public
right.
system right
mm-hmm.
now. Because your children will not be entered in the database unless you're in the public system. But if you have a special needs child, that's happening now.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm.
And so, what would you tell somebody when they hear this about the UN Treaty of the Rights of Disabled Persons? That's coming back, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is. We defeated it once, and they have to get 66 senators. Actually, they have to get 67. And we defeated it by 4 or 5 senators. Here's the problem. It sounds
yeah.
so good, and there's so much support on the conservative side for this, that they're pressuring Senator Hatch right now, and there's another senator. Both of them are wavering as to whether they're going to go the other direction. So what I would ask people to do, if they would, we have a special page on the UN Convention on Peoples with Disabilities. Go to hslda.org,
okay.
and then just enter in the search page the UN Convention on Disabilities,
okay.
and they'll come up a separate page. And we're asking people to call their senators.
Okay.
And we're telling them what to say. And so we would just ask people to help us call and let's get this thing defeated.
Now,
you know, that's another thing, too, that came up in some meetings yesterday, that it is more effective to make a phone call than to send an email.
Yeah, emails are ineffective.
Yeah, that's
okay.
what one of the congressmen that spoke to us yesterday, he said when those staffers have to pick up that phone again and again and again, it gets on their nerves.
It's personal.
And they start putting pressure.
Letters are the best.
Okay.
Letters one, phone calls two, emails, if you can't do anything else, send emails. Now, we use emails a lot, because
certainly.
If you send enough, that gets their attention.
Right.
It does.
But,
you know, if you shut down their server, that gets their attention.
But a few emails here and there, it's not going to make a difference.
No.
Now, when we were discussing this last year,
right.
this treaty on disabilities, people were mentioning there's some reasons that people who don't homeschool would be against this treaty too.
Well, the sovereignty issue.
Yeah.
The basic issue is, should the UN tell us and dictate to us how we should handle disability law in America?
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like that's the very fundamental issue we should all agree on. We have the best, everybody concedes, America has the most protection for disabled people in the world.
Yes.
Why mm-hmm. should we submit to the
Why
UN
should we
on
listen
that?
To them?
Well, here's the argument. Well, by doing that, we will convince other countries then to adopt this treaty, and so we'll have better. So when Americans go over to Europe, they'll have the same protection they have here, you know, the same ramps, etc. That's the reason they're telling us to pass this, when there's no guarantee this would ever happen.
Yes.
In other words, they're saying pass this and give up our sovereignty so that we can force other nations to give up their sovereignty, and maybe we'll get
That's
some
the argument.
Incremental benefit.
That's you got it, Hal. Now, does that make sense?
Not in the slightest.
And we have smart people saying that.
Wow. Now, Mike, could this treaty also impact our choice of medical care?
Yes,
for
but
a disabled
child? I can't tell you exactly because I haven't gotten in the weeds on that.
Yeah.
But yes, it could. And so we have all that up on our website. If somebody wants to be an expert on this treaty, go to the website and go to that special page, and they will be.
And this brings us all back to the Parental Rights Amendment.
Correct.
Because the Parental Rights Amendment...
It would trump it.
It would trump it.
That's correct.
Okay. And so then we've got to get this passed. What do people need to do about that?
Well, again, they need to go to parentalrights.org.
Okay.
Okay. And then they need mm-hmm. to sign a petition
if
they haven't done it before, and need
yes.
to make a donation.
Okay.
Okay.
Sign a petition, make a donation.
Because that allows you to keep spreading the word,
That's
right?
correct.
Mike?
Thank
Keep
y'all.
Up the fight. Go
okay.
out and win some
yes.
more for us.
Okay.
That's
Keep
right.
up your good works, okay?
Thank Great. You very much, Mike. Okay.
Thanks so much.
All right.
You want more. You want it to be better. Not just good, but great. That's what we all want from our marriages. Love, romance, security, respect. We want encouragement, and, well, we want happiness. Is there a way to make your marriage even better, to make it holy and happy and a lot more fun? Yes, there is. The new book by Hal and Melanie Young, My Beloved and My Friend, How to Be Married to Your Best Friend Without Changing Spouses. It's a practical, biblical look at what your marriage can and should be, and it gives you working ways to make your mate your best friend without swapping around. Available December 2013 from mybelovedandmyfriend.com. Brought to you by Great Waters Press.
Well, hello and welcome to Making Biblical Family Life Practical. This is Hal Young.
And I'm Melanie Young.
And we are recording at the National Homeschool Leadership Conference, sponsored by Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And you know, one of the things that we got involved with our oldest son when he was just a young teenager, I started taking him to political meetings with me because I just saw there was an opportunity for him to step into the adult community and to become active. And really, because we wanted him to be active in the political world, we saw it was very important.
And so today we're going to be talking about getting involved in politics. And we have with us one of our favorite authors and speakers, Rick Boyer. Rick, you know, we met you for the first time in 1997 at this very same conference.
It's been a while.
And we had recently read your book, Yes, They're All Ours.
Oh, my.
That's right, because Rick has a few sons, just like we have a few, and a few daughters as well. But
And so, Rick, how many children do you have?
We have 14.
That's
right. And
they've
been homeschooled from the beginning, haven't they?
Yeah, since 1980.
And Rick has written a book called Take Back the Land.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us about your new ministry, Rick, and what this is all about.
Okay, well, it started with a graduation speech. I was invited to speak to the homeschool grads in Iowa in 2008. And I spoke from Joshua chapter 1, the theme being reclaiming territory that once belonged to God's people and had been taken over by others. You know, the people of Israel had been promised the land of Canaan. In fact, God says about Genesis 15 that he had already given the land to people who were not yet born, mm-hmm. but they were of Abraham's lineage. But early on in the life of the nation of Israel, they left and they went to Egypt. They were enslaved there for 400 years and they came back and they found that enemies had raised up strongholds all over the promised land. Well, we've got a similar story in America. America, whether people want to admit it or not, was established on biblical principles, quite clearly.
You can hand me that before I...
Keep talking, Rick.
And that's why America's been so successful. That's why our Constitution has lasted for way over 200 years, when no other country in the world has maintained under one system of government for anywhere near that long. Most of them have had several different constitutions and forms of government in the same time. But because our document is based on the unchanging principles of God's Word, it has held us up as long as we've held it up. Now, in our day, we've let the banner drag a little bit, and it's up to our children, our children's children, to bring America back to her founding principles. So we have a similar situation. It used to be God's people and Christian thought that dominated politics, the family, the media, the church, education, business, and so on. And Christians, for some reason, began to disengage themselves, compartmentalize their religion. So this applies to what we do at home or in Sunday school, but it doesn't apply necessarily to business, politics, and all the rest. So as Christians began to disengage themselves, to view their only mission as getting the gospel out and not being salt and light in the other ways, pagan thought began to raise up principles that are not biblical and do not tend toward the blessing of mankind, do not tend toward the preservation of a culture, and now we've got what we've got. We've got over 40% of children in America growing up in single-parent households. It's over 70% in some ethnic groups. We've got a divorce rate that our founding fathers never would have dreamed.
You know, Rick, we saw that just recently. Our son contacted us back and called us from college. And he said, you know, this afternoon, I was sitting at a table full of Christian students. Mm-hmm. And he said, I was the only one at the table who had two married biological parents.
Wow, that's dynamite. Mm-hmm. Well, that's just a real clear illustration of what happens, you know, when a culture departs from God. It's all dependent upon the people of God. We are the salt and light. Mm-hmm. So what's happened now is we have ungodly people in leadership. You can look at government. It's just a real clear illustration. But look what's happened in education. It's mm-hmm. the radicals of the 60s. You know, the children of the patriotic generation of the 40s, 20 years later, are chanting, marching in the streets, burn their draft cards, mm-hmm. and saying, bleep, no, we won't go. Right. It was their parents that grew the victory gardens and collected rubber and aluminum and paper yeah. and all that other stuff mm-hmm. to win the first war. So what happened? How did one generation that was patriotic raise up another generation that hated their country? Simple. Yep. They didn't. We raised each other. We grew up in peer groups. And it was our peers that determined how we wanted to dress, the yes. lingo we talk with, the music we listen to. And now those rebels of the 60s are the leaders in academia.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they are the wellspring from which our national philosophy is flowing.
That's interesting. You know, one of our good friends is a minister who's very active in the in a large church movement. It, among other things, casts a very skeptical eye on youth ministries. Because of the same, what you just talked there,
absolutely.
You know, that we get the collected foolishness of young people uh-huh. raising themselves, and you know, the companion of fools should be destroyed,
yeah.
And so rather than just letting the teenagers be the peer group of teenagers, why not bring them into adult society and raise them up and disciple them to be adults,
absolutely.
Not just to be successful and popular teenagers.
Exactly. There's yeah. no biblical precedent for an age-segregated youth ministry.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Now, I'm in favor of youth ministry, but I'm
right.
against youth groups.
Right. Uh-huh.
Grouping youth is not the way to minister to them. In fact, what's right. wrong with youth groups is they group youth.
Right.
Now, if God's purpose for youth is to prepare people for adulthood, how do you prepare them for that? By isolating them from all their role models and
precisely.
Surrounding them.
It makes no sense.
No, not
yeah.
at all.
Right.
But, so
right.
why do we do it?
So why?
We do it because we're following the world's way rather than God's way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where do we get the idea of age-segregated youth groups? We get it from schools.
Right.
That's
yeah.
not a godly idea. It makes no sense to separate kids by age group mm-hmm. when that doesn't reflect their ability level.
Mm-hmm.
So we're following an unbiblical model. One more example right in the church mm-hmm. of how pagan thought has taken over where biblical thought used to dominate.
So what do we do about it, Rick? You know, when you say those things, it's grim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The situation looks bad, and especially you open up the news today and... The news sounds like The Onion sounded
really?
A few years ago,
yeah.
you know? It's
well,
like, I can't
you know,
even believe this is the news.
Yes.
Well, you know, and for benefit of our listeners who don't read that, we don't recommend it, okay?
It's,
no,
yeah, we don't.
But that's a website that's popular for its political satire and parody. Yeah. And
but you can't tell the difference between satire and
yeah.
the real news anymore.
Yeah. Sometimes it's hard for comedians to stay ahead of the news, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you've got a different vision, mm-hmm. and you have a ministry now called... Take Back the Land.
Right.
It's got a different emphasis. It wants to go in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Yeah. Well, let me go back to where I started. It grew mm-hmm. out of a graduation speech.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to the homeschool graduates in Iowa mm-hmm. based on Joshua chapter 1. And I told them a few simple things. I said, number one, grow up right now.
Here, here.
Don't wait till you're 25 or 30 or married or whatever. Just grow up, stand up, and step up. It is your turn at the plate.
Love it.
You have no excuse not to be working for God and fighting for His causes right now. I don't care if you're 17, 18, or whatever. You just suck it up because Uncle Rick is going to tell you what you've got to do.
Okay. And,
tell him. Tell him, Uncle Rick.
I did. And I explained, you know, here are some of the areas. The Israelites had their Jericho and their Ai and their Kiriath Arba and other semi-pronounceable names.
Yeah.
Where the enemy had raised up strongholds where mm-hmm. biblical thought used to dominate. Same thing. In America, we've got the government, the church, the family, the business, the education, all that. How do we get those things back? How do we reduce those strongholds and replace them? Well, here's how we do it. God's doing it already. The homeschooling movement is God's answer to America's malaise.
Mm-hmm.
That's a simple fact. Okay, we are like Malachi chapter 4. This is God turning the hearts of the fathers back to the children. and the children back to the fathers, lest he come and smite the land of the curse. Mm-hmm. And here's how it's going to work.
Okay.
We start out in the homeschool movement concerned about the effect of the culture on our kids. You know, the old question, what about socialization? You know, yeah. Well, I'm not a socialist. So I'm not concerned about that, okay? Yeah. My kids do just fine. We've got to shift now in paradigm, and what we've got to do is complete the vision for the homeschool movement and go from concern about the effect of the culture on our kids to concern about the effect of our kids on the culture.
Yes, okay.
So
okay.
We do it
very
by
well said.
Training leadership.
Okay.
Now, what's the second question? What's the other form of what about socialization? The other form of the same question is, aren't you afraid your kids won't fit in? To which the proper answer is, no, I'm scared of that they might fit in. That's why I'm homeschooling my kids.
That's yeah. what Hal yeah. says. We're not raising them to be normal. Normal is average. We don't do average.
That's right. We're not content with average. God didn't call us to be average. Right. Call us to be a peculiar people, which means a special people, a set
That's
apart
right.
people. Now, you want your kids to fit in, you're saying, I want you to be a follower.
Right.
Followers fit into the crowd, but leaders stand out. Mm-hmm. There's your choice, fit in or stand out. So what I'm telling people is, the church is God's army, but a lot of it's AWOL, okay?
Yeah.
What
yeah.
we need is new leadership. So I used to think the homeschool movement was the army. No, I was wrong. The church is the army. The homeschool movement, Christian homeschool movement, mm-hmm. is the officer training corps.
Oh, I like that.
And so we've got to train up our children and say, look, you're not just responsible to keep the culture from influencing you. You
right.
are responsible to exert a godly influence on everybody around you. Now, Proverbs, I think it's 12:24, says the righteous is a guide to his neighbor. What is a guide but a leader? Somebody mm-hmm. who can show you the way to get where you're going because they've been there before.
Mm-hmm.
And in all ages, our kids should be leaders to the degree that they're biblically qualified.
Right.
Okay.
And so what we've got to do is help our children find their passion. And in my older sons, it turned out to be politics.
Okay.
And that's why when we do our Take Back the Land conference, we start out with politics.
Mm-hmm.
That's our their passion, their gifting. They've got a track record, and they know what to do. I'm just following my son's footsteps when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm.
Politics is not really my personal passion. That's where mm-hmm. we're starting. As God adds other families and other individuals to our movement who bring in other gifts and other levels of experience, then we just continually expand until we are producing young leaders who will lead their Christian brethren in their own local churches to do all the things the church ought to be doing. Romans 1 says that that government leaders are ministers of God. Mm-hmm. Christians are responsible to select the ministers of God. Don't let anybody tell you, and I know you two don't,
right.
that Christians shouldn't be involved in politics. We should be involved above anybody else. Okay, so
yes.
politics is one thing. But people will say, oh, I don't believe Christians ought to be involved in politics. Our business is getting the gospel out. Our business is witnessing. And I always want to grab them by the scruff of their neck and saying, how are you doing on that?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because
that
most people that aren't...
That is it, isn't it?
Most yes. people that aren't proactive in doing what they can do, including the political realm, are usually not doing what they can do when it comes to getting out the gospel either.
You are so right there. And,
sure,
and you know, that's one of the things I hear too. People say, you know, I don't want to take my children out of the public school because I want to be missionaries there. And I always ask them, I say, so how many people have you won to Christ at work?
Good point.
Because if they're not missionaries at work, how can they expect their less experienced, less mature, less taught children to be missionaries in a more hostile environment
right.
than the American workplace?
You wouldn't send your kids to Africa to be missionaries at 8 years old.
No.
They are not ready for that.
Right.
So people say, well, how are you going to reach them if you don't? Well, how do you reach a hog? You don't have to wallow in the muck with it. I mean, those
right.
kids, they've got homes. They're in neighborhoods. They go all kinds of places. You don't have to be a prisoner to minister to prisoners.
Right.
So that's a bogus argument. You know?
Right.
And besides that, there's lots of other people that need to be reached, too.
Yeah. Well, Rick, this is really good, and I'd like to continue the conversation. Can you stick with us, and let's go on to another segment?
Sure, be glad to.
Okay.
All right, we'll be right back.
It's not always easy having sons. Teenage boys put away a startling amount of groceries. Younger boys can be downright destructive. They're noisy, unconcerned with hygiene, and the dog has a longer attention span, or so it seems some days. If these are God's chosen gifts to us, and we believe that they are, then why does it seem so hard? How can we prepare these boys to serve God when we can barely make it through the day? Isn't there a better way? The answer is yes. Raising Real Men, Surviving, Teaching, and Appreciating Boys by Hal and Melanie Young is a practical, award-winning guide to equipping the hearts and minds of boys without breaking or losing your own. John Rosemond says, "This is just what the doctor ordered for parents who want to raise capable Christian men of character." Raising Real Men by Hal and Melanie Young. Visit them on the web at raisingrealmen.com. Brought to you by Great Waters Press.
Welcome back to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. I'm Melanie.
And I'm Hal. And we are here with Rick Boyer, the head of a new ministry called Take Back the Land. And Rick is explaining something of the vision of tearing down the strongholds that have grown up, not just in our political realm, but even in the church, the community, business, every aspect of our lives.
One thing you said before the break, Rick, that just really struck me is that the church is the army, and the homeschool movement is the officer training corps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we're training our children not to fit in, not to comply and compromise, but to stand up and lead.
Right. That's
Can you talk
job.
About that a little bit more? How do we raise leaders?
Oh, excellent question. You know, we're sitting around the lunch table today at this conference talking about some of the problems we see in our families and all around us in the culture, especially in the mm-hmm. church, how we're losing so many of our Christian kids. They turn their back on the faith and all that. Kids rebelling against their parents. And you know what? Yep, I'm talking too fast, but I get passionate about this.
That's all right. I love it.
Press on.
Keep on.
All boils down to one simple issue, and that is, am I here to serve or be served?
Boy, isn't that the truth.
Now, if I'm here to be served, then I expect my parents and everybody else to treat me right.
Yep.
And if they don't, which they won't because they're sinners,
right,
then I'm going to take offense, I'm going to put up a wall between me and them, I'm not going to obey, I'm not going to respect, and I'm not going to communicate. But if I am here to serve, then it's my job to forgive whether they ask for it or not, whether they deserve it or not. If they deserve it, they wouldn't need it.
Right.
We could resolve so many family problems simply by deciding I'm here to serve, not be served. Rather than taking offense, I'm here to forgive. When I give offense, it's my job to ask for forgiveness, make restitution, and rebuild the relationship to the extent I'm able. If we can get this down, we don't have to worry about leadership, because Jesus said, "The greatest among you shall be your servant." If we give if we teach our children a servant's heart, mm-hmm. if we teach them to do the things that meet needs rather than please themselves, we're training up leaders automatically.
Well, you know, that's something we've really seen, Rick, because in the next generation, one of the challenges that we hear from leaders, even in the homeschool movement, is that many people in the next generation haven't been trained to service. They don't get the concept of doing things just to be serving the Lord.
Mm-hmm. Or even, you know, we talk to a lot of local support group leaders, and the veterans, the people in our generation, are often very frustrated with the new families coming in because they come with a consumer mentality. They want to find services.
Right.
They want to join up to some organization that's going to take care of them. Whereas in our generation, we looked around and said, "I have a need. My neighbor has a similar need. Let's get together and work this out cooperatively."
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so you want to inculcate that into the next generation. You want to intentionally, purposefully train our young people first to be servants,
mm-hmm.
and secondly to step up, to take responsibility,
right,
to be the leaders.
If they've got servants' hearts, they will rise to leadership, because people will be calling on them to do things sometimes that nobody else wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is that when you challenge young people with this vision, they respond. Now, I learned that at that graduation speech,
mm-hmm.
because I was hard on those kids. I came mm-hmm. right down on them. I clouded up and rained all over them. And I told them, you're not in this world to be served. You're here to serve. You're here to take responsibility, to meet needs, and you don't have time to play video games. Okay?
Yep.
So what was their response?
The loudest, longest standing ovation I've ever gotten in anything.
Wow.
You know,
that's encouraging.
I read a very powerful book a couple of years ago by Joseph and Claudia Allen. Mm-hmm. They're a couple of clinical psychologists at the University of Virginia. The book is called Escaping the Endless Adolescence. They talked about all of their casework dealing with young people, and one of the things they really emphasize is that young people naturally want to step up and do something meaningful.
They want to do real things.
And if we don't give them that opportunity, they'll try to express their maturity by anything available, by substance abuse or sexual misbehavior or whatever,
because gang membership.
Because we close the doors on constructive things.
Legitimate adult roles.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so instead they seek the illegitimate adult roles because it's all that we've left open to them.
Well, you know, the Bible says, the Jewish tradition of bar mitzvah declared a young man to be a young man at 13.
Right.
Not 21 or 30 or whatever.
Yes.
So we have low expectations of our young people, and we need to raise those expectations. When we tell young people you can't do this or you can't do that, or when we lock them together in their own age group as if they're not able to handle adult responsibilities,
adult conversation,
what are we telling them? We're telling them we don't believe in you. You're nobody, you're nothing, you have nothing to offer adults. You just stay over there in your play group.
What's been fascinating to us is when we've done the opposite, mm-hmm. we've taken those young men and said, okay, we'd like for you to come to this political meeting or this nonprofit meeting with us. This is how you dress. You need to stay pretty quiet till you learn the ropes because you're here to serve.
Yep.
Then it's been amazing to us to see how the young men step up their interest and how the people in the organizations grab hold of them because they know those kids are the future.
Exactly. And the idea of being here to serve is so key. You look at the book of Joshua, and that's become one of my favorite chapters of Scripture, Joshua 1. God is about to lead his people back to the promised land, the land he promised them 400 years earlier. And he knows they've got battles to fight. He knows the enemy's there, they're entrenched, they're solid, and they're powerful. Now he's got to select a leader. He's already got him selected, and he's been preparing him. This man is about to be exalted to the highest position in the very nation of Israel. He's going to lead 2 million people to conquer a land that rightfully belongs to them. And how does he describe that man? It says, after the death of Moses, the Lord said to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant.
Wow.
A servant of Moses.
That's it. You know, he's the son of Nun, and he's
that.
A servant of Moses. He's already been in leadership. He's a servant, but he's already been leading in the nation in battle. He's down the valley fighting. Moses is up on the hill holding up his rod, and Joshua's been leading the troops. But now God takes Moses completely out of the picture, and we see that the training has in fact worked. He's been a servant. Now he's qualified for the highest leadership position. So what we're wanting to do with our kids is we're trying to give them gradually increasing levels of responsibility as servants, and they will naturally move into leadership. People will call on them. My oldest son, Rick, was chairman of our county's Republican Party at 19 years old.
Wow.
Why? Because he started at 16 years old as a servant, stuffing envelopes, making phone calls, putting up campaign signs, working at headquarters, whatever, all unpaid, and at 19, he ousts the incumbent and gets elected. And he gets elected again 2 years later.
Wow.
And then he puts a hand-placed successor in his position, gets him elected in a special election because he resigns because he gets offered a scholarship to college. He goes to college. He comes out of college. He runs for the County Board of Supervisors, which is our local lawmaking group.
Right.
He wins that. 4 years later, it's time to run for re-election, but law school offers him a huge scholarship, and so he says, can't do it, I'm not going to run again right now, and he goes to law school. But all this time, he's been politicking in the background and training his brothers to come on in. Today, his second brother, our second born, is now chairman of the Campbell County Republican Party. Their third brother, Nate, is chairman of the Bedford County Republican Party, which is the county next door. And in 2010, they and their friends got elected to the chair in Prince Edward County, Virginia's Republican Party, an 18-year-old homeschool graduate.
Wow.
Oh, that's awesome.
This is it. Our young people can do the job if we give them the chance.
Yeah.
And the issue, if you don't want your kid playing video games all the time, teach him to be a servant. Teach him he's responsible for every minute of his life. He does not have the right to waste any of it. Mm. He's got a right for rest and recreation, but only as much as is appropriate to keep him strong and active so he can serve.
Excellent.
Okay.
Before we go, Rick, I want you to tell us, when is your next Take Back the Land conference?
We're looking at March of next year in Lynchburg, Virginia. We're working on this one in conjunction with Liberty University School of Law.
Okay.
Where my son graduated. We haven't set a final date. We're still working on that.
Right.
But
well,
go to our website, takebacktheland.com.
Okay.
We'll keep you updated as we go.
And great. How can they get your book? Take Back the Land.
They can get that by going to either that website or our family ministry's website, which is characterconcepts.com. And that and all of our books and audios are available there.
And you will find a huge amount of wonderful resources for building a biblical family on that website. And so, folks, head out there to characterconcepts.com for the ministry of Rick and Marilyn Boyer, and takebacktheland.com. Is that right, Rick?
Yep. Okay.
For this new ministry aimed at getting our kids to step up, to be servants, and to take back this land. And boy, we sure need them to do that.
We do indeed.
Rick, we appreciate what you're doing, and I know from experience, what you talk about is truth. It really works. We've seen it in our own family,
yep.
And we're seeing it in families around us. Thank you very much for your ministry. Thanks for being with us.
Great pleasure, brother. Thank you.
God bless. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, ma'am.
And just a word.
And with that rise in the background buzz, we finish our interview with Rick Boyer of Take Back the Land. And we are going to be speaking a few places this week.
Yes, we're at Homeschool Days at Wilderness at the Smokies this week.
We're in Sevierville, Tennessee until Thursday. So we're going to be speaking tomorrow,
yes.
Which will be November 12th. We're going to be speaking on homeschooling boys.
Holistic homeschooling, how to teach those boys. And you know, you really can't beat it. This is a great place. Water slides and crazy rides and lots of splashing and encouragement and homeschool family fellowship.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I like it. It's a vacation with edification. That's pretty good.
Now, don't miss next week. We're going to be talking about getting ready for the holidays.
But before then, we're going to be speaking in Asheville.
Oh, I forgot.
We're going to be in Asheville, North Carolina on Thursday the 14th. We're speaking at Simple Truth Bible Fellowship.
And we're doing two sessions then.
That's right. So if you want more information, go to our website. You can go to halandmelanie.com and click on the button that says speaking, and that will tell you more, lead you to more places where we're going to be speaking in the local area. Now, next week on this program,
we are going to be talking about getting ready for the holidays, and more than that, how can you make Christ the center of your celebration?
And it is so easy to lose track of why we're celebrating. Because it's, frankly, it's a lot of work getting ready for Thanksgiving, getting everything ready for Christmas, and we can just lose track of the purpose underlying it.
So join us live next Monday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, on the Ultimate Radio Show. .com. And if you can't wait till then, go head out to our site at raisingrealmen.com/wegathertogether.
Oh, that's great. That's a great resource. We put together a list of all of our favorite holiday recipes. And resources. We Gather Together is like a unit study on Thanksgiving. We've got things from the writings of the original pilgrims. We've got the lyrics for your favorite Thanksgiving hymns, ideas for making this Thanksgiving truly a celebration of Thanksgiving to God. So, yeah, go check that out. That's a great resource.
Yes, and we just cannot wait to next week, so meet us there. In the meantime, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/raisingrealmen and facebook.com/halandmelanie or on the web at raisingrealmen.com.
Okay, so until next week, thank you so much for listening. This has been Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Thanks for coming. See you next week, folks.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalandMelanie.com. Or follow us on social media.
You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/Hal and Melanie or Facebook.com/Raising Real Men. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.